Welcome to Morning with Meaning with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Broder, and today we'll be learning kinos 6 through 11. The first of the morning kinos is kina number 6. This elegy has a very complex structure and incorporates words from all five prakim of Megillas Eicha. This kina begins with the word shavas, which means stopped or ended. The kina discusses how the glory and dignity of the Jewish people ceased with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Instead, they were scorned and humiliated by their enemies. In order for us to appreciate the degradation that the Jewish people felt, we need to understand that other nations had previously looked at them with envy because of their stature. The Jews were a proud nation who had enjoyed power, prestige, and status. All of that seemed to be suddenly taken from them. When this happened, the Jewish people didn't just suffer from poverty and hunger. They felt humiliated and disgraced. The other nations reveled in their pain and humiliation, which of course compounded their suffering. This kina describes some of these feelings and asks Hashem to return us to our former glory. We also request that Hashem avenge the evil that was done to us. The next kina starts with the words Eicha Atzta. It's one of five kinos written by Rav Elazar HaKalir that begin with the word Eicha. This word Eicha also starts three out of the five prakim in Megillas Eicha. The translation of Eicha is how can it be so? And it's an expression of utter bewilderment and incomprehension over what has transpired. On Tisha B'Av, we use the word Eicha repeatedly because we struggle to grasp how the tragedy could have occurred. In the kina of Eicha Atzta, we ask Hashem how he could have let these terrible things happen. It's important to mention that usually we don't challenge Hashem in this way, but instead adhere to the principle of Tzidek HaDin, that Hashem's judgment is unquestionably correct. Only on Tisha B'Av are we allowed to question Hashem, because Yirmiyahu set the precedent for doing so when he wrote Megillas Eicha. Each paragraph in this kina starts by mentioning a calamity that we suffered, which is then contrasted with a moment of closeness that we shared with Hashem. We end each paragraph by asking Hashem to remember that special connection that we had. The first stanza asks how Hashem could let us fall b'yad Adomim, into the hands of Edom, which refers to Esav's descendants. We ask why Hashem seems not to remember choosing Yaakov and not Esav at the Bris Bein Habsarim. So how can it be that Titus, a descendant of Esav, reigned over the Jewish people and was allowed to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? The next stanza questions how Hashem could send us into exile and away from Eretz Yisrael, when previously he had shortened the route from Har Sinai so that Bnei Yisrael could come to Eretz Yisrael quickly. If Hashem wants us in Eretz Yisrael, why is he banishing us from there now? In another paragraph, we ask, Eicha zanachta b'za'amecha lezalzel b'yad zarim zvulecha? How could Hashem allow Titus to enter the Beis HaMikdash and defile it? Doesn't Hashem remember Chitun Chukei Chorev when we received the Torah at Har Sinai, which was considered like our marriage to Hashem? What we are asking is, given our intimate relationship with Hashem, how could he allow a stranger to invade the private home that he shares with us? This kina continues with many more examples of our special relationship with Hashem, and each time we question how Hashem could ignore that closeness and allow us to suffer the way we have. Moving on to the eighth kina, which opens with the words A'adeh ad chug shamayim. We are expressing our desire to find the words that would effectively advocate for our redemption and convince Hashem to restore us from our sorrow. We say Agare iti kol bnei vayis, that we want the angels to join us in beseeching Hashem. In this kina, we express the depths of despair, but also hope for redemption. The ninth kina starts with the words Eicha Tifarti, and it describes how Bnei Yisrael didn't follow the ways of the Torah. Because of this, Hashem withheld the blessings that he had outlined in Parshat Bechukosai. In that Torah portion, Hashem promises to provide for the Jewish people's well-being, but warns that he will only do this if we adhere to the mitzvos. This kinnah makes a correlation between the hardships that the Jews suffered and the blessings that Hashem denied them. One stanza includes the words Mizei Rav Aspekatsir, which describes the famine that befell the Jewish people. Since the Jews didn't follow the Torah, Hashem suspended his promise of V'hisig lachem dayesh et batsir, to provide an abundance of crops. In the stanza beginning with the words Darach kashto v'chila b'cheretz, we're saying that Hashem allowed the destruction to happen. Just as the Torah cautioned, the blessing of peace in the land, V'natati shalom ba'aretz, was withheld since the Jews sinned. Another verse in the Kinnah states, Zanach Elyon Kirat Moadechem, that Hashem abandoned Yerushalayim. Our bad deeds caused Hashem to forsake his blessing of Ufanisi Alechem, giving us his attention. This Kinnah is yet another example of recognizing Tzidduk HaDin, that Hashem's actions are just and we deserved all the pain that we suffered. Kinnah number 10 starts with the phrase, Echa Yashva Chavatzelet HaSharon. This kinnah talks about the loss of kahuna, the priesthood. The Kohanim had been divided into 24 mishmarot, watches, who took care of the Beis HaMikdash on a weekly basis. More than anyone else, the lives of the Kohanim changed when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It's important for us to realize that the loss of the kahuna was a tragedy for all of the Jewish people, as we would no longer be exposed to and influenced by the greatness of the Kohanim. Kinnah Yud Aleph, the 11th Kinnah, is considered the most important elegy because it has the earliest source of obligation from the time of the Nevi'im. In this Kinnah, Yirmiyahu is eulogizing King Yoshiyahu after witnessing his death. Let me give you some background. 22 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Yoshiyahu became the Jewish king. His reign was the final opportunity to do tshuva, as he was the last strong king of the Jews. His death is considered the beginning of the Chorban. The words Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu serve as an introduction to this kinnah. Those words mean Yirmiyahu lamented over Yoshiyahu's death. Through this kinnah, we learn that Yoshiyahu was 8 years old when he became king. Ben Shmona Shana Hechel Lidrosh Me'elokav. He abandoned the idolatrous ways of his father and grandfather and instead recommitted to Hashem. Early in his reign, he restored the Beis HaMikdash, which had fallen into disrepair after years of being neglected. In the course of the renovation, he discovered a Sefer Torah that had been hidden away. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Kuf Bet tells us that King Menashe, who was Yoshiyahu's grandfather, was so evil that he would take Sifrei Torah and replace Hashem's name with the name of an idolatrous god, if one can even imagine such a thing. One of the Kohanim at that time took the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had written at the end of his life and hid it away so that it wouldn't suffer the same fate as the other Sifrei Torah. This was the Sefer Torah that Yoshiyahu now found. According to the Medrash, when Yoshiyahu opened this Sefer Torah, it revealed words of rebuke and warned of the destruction of the land as punishment for sinning. Yoshiyahu took this as a sign from Hashem, and he did his best to purge idolatry from the Jewish people. He was largely successful, but not completely. As we'll see, this is what led to his downfall. The Kinnah explains that Yoshiyahu's death came about when B'nei Cham Ba'avram Chalu Alav, B'nei Cham, which refers to the Egyptians, wanted to pass through the land of Israel to fight with the Assyrians. They weren't coming to wage war with the Jews, but just wanted to go through Israel en route to Assyria. King Yoshiyahu denied them safe passage through Eretz Yisrael. Yoshiyahu had good reason for this refusal. There is a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra in which Hashem promises that if the Jews keep the mitzvos, Cherev lo ta'avor ba'arsechem, no sword would pass through Israel, even a sword of peace. Yoshiyahu truly believed that all the Jews had done tshuva, and in that case, he shouldn't allow an army to march through Eretz Yisrael, even if the Jews weren't the target of the battle. The problem was that Yoshiyahu miscalculated the Jews' righteousness, when in fact, davak bochet letzanei hador, asher kamu achar hadelet lestor. Some Jews continued to sin, and they worshipped idols behind closed doors. Therefore, Hashem's promise of protecting them from the sword didn't apply. The story continues with the Egyptian king threatening Yoshiyahu if he didn't permit their entry. Yirmiyahu advised Yoshiyahu to let them pass, but v'lo shama l'chozeh l'shuv achorim, Yoshiyahu didn't listen to the Navi. The Egyptians moved forward, and Yoshiyahu didn't back down, thinking that he was doing the right thing. As they approached, Vayaru Hamorim Lamelach Yoshia, the archers shot arrows at King Yoshiyahu. Even when Yoshiyahu's eyes were closing in death, the Egyptians continued to throw spears and arrows. A total of 300 arrows pierced his body. Yirmiyahu ran to Yoshiyahu so he could be with him as his neshama left him, to hear his final words. Ruach sifatav hivtzat mipihu, tzadiku Hashem, ki marisi pihu. The last words on Yoshiyahu's breath were Hashem is righteous, indicating his acceptance of Hashem's punishment. While it might seem that Yoshiyahu was dying because of the people's sin rather than his own, he recognized that he was partially at fault as the king. It was his responsibility to rouse them all to do tshuva, or at the very least, to know where he had failed. His last words acknowledged his culpability in the matter. Again, we see here the concept of tzedek hadin, which is one of the main themes of Tisha B'Av. As much as we ask Hashem Eicha, how this could have happened, we need to temper that questioning with an acceptance that Hashem is correct in everything he does. It then becomes our job to find Hashem's purpose for the pain and the meaning behind the suffering. If we do this, we can change our bad behaviors and bring about the ultimate redemption. Thank you for listening to Morning with Meaning with the OU Women's Initiative. This shiur is dedicated L'Iloi Nishmas Moshe Ben Eliyahu, Moshe Williams, Alav HaShalom, who was Nifter B'Shem Tov Erev Shabbos Chazon, Ches Menachem Av Tav Shin Pei Bet.